Thank you, Debbie. Good afternoon. Welcome, everyone. Call to order the Senate Committee on Workforce. Today is Monday, April 24th, 2017. We're going to go right into business here. I just wanted to state Senator Knope, unfortunately, cannot be here with us. He will be hopefully back tomorrow. So we're going to have a public hearing on House Bill 2192. And Deborah, could you please summarize the bill?
House Bill 2192 was introduced at the request of the House Interim Committee on Business and Labor. It is the first time before this committee. The bill increases the term for members appointed to the Workers' Compensation Management Labor Advisory Committee from 2 years to 3 years. There is no fiscal impact and no revenue impact.
Okay, we'll go ahead and call up Mr. Savage, please.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Chair Taylor, members of the committee, I'm Lou Savage. I'm the administrator for the Workers' Comp Division, which is a division of the Department of Consumer and Business Services. House Bill 2192 increases the terms for the Workers' Compensation Management Labor Advisory Committee from 2 years to 3 years. As I think you know, MLAC, which is how it's referred to commonly, is charged with reviewing the workers' compensation issues for the state of Oregon and providing recommendations to the governor and the legislature on policy issues. There are five members from labor and five members of management on the committee. They are appointed by the governor and approved by the Senate. The director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services is an ex officio member. Currently, the terms are for 2 years. The purpose of this bill is to expand that term to 3 years. As you know, the workers' compensation system is highly technical, and it takes a fair amount of time to get up to speed on some of these issues. So the purpose of this bill is to allow members to have a little more experience, gain a little more technical knowledge by having a three-year term. And it passed unanimously out of the House, and we urge your support.
Okay. Any questions? Okay. Oh, yes. Senator Hansel.
Just more of a statement. I would certainly be supportive of this. It makes sense to me to increase them a year because of the tech. You know, they do great work that brings them up to speed. I just think this will help facilitate very much.
Okay. All right. Any other questions? No. Seeing, we're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2192, and then go ahead and open up. I think we'll just have you stay up here, Mr. Savage, if that's okay. We can call a public hearing on House Bill. We're going to open up several bills all at the same time. So we're going to do House Bill 3335, House Bill 2336A, and House Bill 2337A, and House Bill 2338A. And I'm going to ask Deborah to summarize the bill, please.
HB 2335 was introduced at the request of the governor for the Department of Consumer and Business Services. It allows the director of DCBS to appoint up to three members to a panel of medical arbiters upon request by a party involved with the closure of a workers' compensation claim. There's no fiscal impact and no revenue impact. HB 2336A was also introduced at the request of the governor and DCBS. It allows the director of DCBS to appoint a claims processing agent for a self-insured employer who defaults, cancels certification, or is decertified by the director, provides that the paying agency must reimburse the department for expenditures made and for present value of reasonably expected expenditures. There's no fiscal impact and no revenue impact. HB 2337A was also introduced by the governor at the request of DCBS. It increases the minimum and maximum workers' compensation benefits for permanent total disability. And fiscal impact was issued. The expenditure of DCBS is predicted to be roughly $2.6 million in the 2017-19 biennium and $3.5 million in 2019-21 biennium. Expenditures to the Workers' Benefit Fund of approximately $1.7 million per year, which can be absorbed by the Workers' Benefit Fund without need for an increase in payroll assessment rate, and there is no revenue impact. HB 2338A was also introduced at the request of the governor for DCBS. It simplifies the criteria and benefit levels for death benefits due to children of a worker who dies from an on-the-job injury or occupational disease or who dies while permanently and totally disabled. It requires the director of DCBS to adjust the amount and duration of death benefits for injuries that occurred prior to the effective date. a fiscal impact statement was issued. Expenditures for DCBS and the Oregon Health Authority are approximately $2.3 million for the 2017-19 biennium, $3.1 million for the 2019-21 biennium, and expenditure for the Workers' Benefit Fund of approximately $1.5 million per year, which can be absorbed by the fund without need for an increase in payroll assessment rate, and there is no revenue impact.
Okay, so we have these four different bills in front of us. Anybody have any questions? They're pretty straightforward. Any concerns? Okay, we're going to go ahead and close. We're going to go ahead and have Mr. Savage talk about the bill. Sorry, I was just like used to. I have to tell you, Mr. Savage, we're used to doing some really difficult bills here, so this is actually really enjoyable. No, I know. So go ahead. Tell us what we need to know.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'll talk first about House Bill 2335, which deals with medical arbiter panels, and then I'll ask Sally Cohn, who's the Deputy Administrator, to talk about House Bill 2336. So House Bill 2335, as I said, deals with medical arbiters. When a workers' compensation claim is closed by an insurer and the extent of the worker's permanent disability is determined, the worker or the insurer may request a review of the claim closure by DCBS. And if the objection is with the findings of the worker's impairment, the law requires the director to refer the claim to a medical arbiter for review. And the law also allows either the worker or an insurer to request a panel of three medical arbiters to request the exam. DCBS manages and coordinates the arbiter exam, the scheduling and the arrangements. And recruitment and retention is actually quite a challenge. The geography, the scheduling can create some issues. And as you can imagine, scheduling three physicians for a panel exam creates even additional problems because of worker traveling and having three arbiters that can deal with a particular issue. So at this point, under the law, the department does not actually have statutory discretion to appoint fewer than three arbiters. And there's really very little legislative history to explain the reason that it was required to have three arbiters. We haven't really seen any situations where there's been a tiebreaker issue where there's two arbiters on either side of an issue and then a third arbiter needing to break the tie. So we are requesting that the department be given the discretion to appoint two arbiters in those situations where it's appropriate. We would base this on criteria that was established by rule, and it would be with the agreement of both the insurer and the worker or the worker's attorney. If we are able to appoint two as opposed to three, and this happens on a fairly regular basis, the system would save up to $278,000 per year, which is not insignificant with respect to the cost of the system. The Management Labor Advisory Committee supports this bill, and the bill did pass unanimously by the House.
Okay, so Mr. Savage, why don't you go ahead, since I see you signed up also for 2337A and 2338A, why don't you go ahead and talk about those as well, please?
So 2337, House Bill 2337 deals with permanent disability benefits. As you know, the worker compensation system is really designed to restore an injured worker physically and economically to self-sufficiency. One of the ways that this happens is through the actual direct benefit program. Permanent total disability benefits, which is sometimes referred to as PTD benefits, are for the most severely injured workers. Those are workers who cannot go back to work. The current minimum benefit is 90% of the worker's wage, or $50, whichever is less, which is a very low benefit level. The maximum benefit level is 66 2/3 of the worker's wages, subject to 100% cap, which is the state average weekly wage. That is currently around $974 a week. Currently, there's about 600 existing permanently and totally disabled workers in the system with about 10 new awards each year. Not all of these workers would actually be impacted by this proposal. House Bill 2337 increases the statutory award ranges for permanent total disability benefits. The minimum benefit is increased to 33% of the state average weekly wage. And that amount approximates the federal poverty level for a family of two. And the bill also increases the maximum PTD benefit to 133% of the state average weekly wage, but retains the basis for the benefit at 66 2/3 of the worker's wages. The cost to insurers for new PTD awards when the bill would take effect, which would be January 2018, is expected to be really very minimal, around $50,000 per year system-wide. Most of the cost will come out of the worker benefit fund because these would be additional expenditures for cost of living benefit adjustments for those existing PTD claims, and that would be about $1.7 million per year. The worker benefit fund balance is sufficient to absorb these expenditures, and it's not expected to impact the assessment rate at all. And again, the Management Labor Advisory Committee supports this bill. House Bill 2337 passed out of the House unanimously.
Okay.
Happy to answer any questions.
And then, sort of, 2338, 2337, and 2335 are the three that you're here to you've signed up for.
Sure. Okay. So, House Bill 2, well, should I, you want to do them in order? I can have
Ms. You can Wilson. Just go ahead and talk about 2338, and then
okay,
we'll call
okay,
up Sally,
great.
And we'll call up Tom.
Okay, so House Bill 2338 concerns workers' compensation survivor benefits for children. The beneficiaries of the deceased worker, the spouse and children, receive survivor benefits when a worker dies as a result of an occupational injury or disease, or during the period of permanent total disability. The benefits are calculated based on the Oregon's average weekly wage. And the benefits have changed over the years to address societal and family structures. But as a result of that, there is some disconnect and inconsistencies in the system. They're difficult to administer and, frankly, even difficult to explain to the beneficiaries of the system. This bill simplifies the criteria and benefit levels for death benefits issued to children and makes the delivery of the benefits predictable for the families, and it streamlines it for insurers who are paying the benefits. It addresses this in a number of different ways. First, the law, this new statute replaces the current two-level monthly benefit structure for children with one structure that would be the same for all children, and it would be for the age of 19. That's the key point. The bill also replaces an archaic structure for monthly benefits while the child is attending higher education. It replaces it with a more flexible structure that allows for up to 48 months of benefits between the ages of 19 and 26. Currently, the child must be 18 when they leave high school and start attending higher education within 6 months. And the benefit levels end when the child either stops attending, graduates, or becomes 23, whichever is first. So that means if a child needs to work for a while and be out of school, they could be denied the benefits if it takes them longer than the age of 23 to finish school. So this way, it's a 48-month period which the child can use between the ages of 19 and 26, even if there's a break in the period of time that they're in higher education. The system would work a lot better for the children to be able to have this flexibility. It also, this bill also provides a time frame for paying timely burial benefits when the death occurs after the acceptance rate. It clarifies that the survivors eligible for benefits when the worker dies during the period of permanent total disability includes the children of the worker. There was a little bit of a question about that, and so we wanted to clarify that in the statute. There's approximately 30 fatality claims every year. About 55% of those leave children survivors. And currently there's around 310 surviving children receiving benefits. The cost to insurers is expected to be around $210,000 a year system-wide. And again, like the permanent total disability benefit proposal, most of this will be picked up by the worker benefit fund because we're dealing with retroactive benefits. And we've anticipated this expense. The worker benefit fund has sufficient funds to accommodate the increased reimbursements under the bill. The Management Labor Advisory Committee supported this bill, and 2338 did pass the House unanimously.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much. Any questions for Mr. Savage? Okay, thank you. Appreciate that. And then we're going to go ahead and we'll call up Sally Cohen. We've already opened the work, public hearing on Senate Bill 2336A, so we'll have you, Ms. Cohen. Give us some insight, please.
Thank you, Chair Taylor, members of the committee. I'm Sally Cohen. I'm the Deputy Administrator of the Workers' Compensation Division, which is part of the Department of Consumer and Business Services, DCBS. House Bill 2336 contains some regulatory streamlining items addressing the area of workers' compensation self-insurance. So Oregon employers may cover their workers' compensation obligations in different ways, and that includes purchasing insurance from an insurance company or self-insuring their risks and liabilities individually or as part of a group. And DCBS, we are responsible for certifying self-insured employers and for regulating self-insurance. In 2014, the legislature enacted Senate Bill 1558 at the request of DCBS. And at that time, that bill focused on a specific urgent situation that we had concerning several self-insured employer groups that had defaulted, and we wanted to ensure that workers were getting their benefits in a timely manner. In the process of implementing that legislation over the last couple of years, we have identified three areas where that bill inadvertently created some inconsistencies. So House Bill 2336, first area that addresses is regarding claims processing. Under the 2014 bill, the director can immediately assign a claims processor for self-insured employer groups that are in default or who have decertified. And this is to ensure that workers get the benefits as quickly as possible with minimum disruption. However, the way that the law reads now, it distinguishes between groups that defaulted or decertified prior to the passage of Senate Bill 1558, where we can immediately assign a claims processing agent, and those that have defaulted or decertified after the passage of Senate Bill 1558, where we cannot. For those situations, we must use the state's procurement process, and this can be time-consuming and could possibly hinder our ability to ensure worker benefits are paid in a timely manner. House Bill 2336 addresses this problem by allowing DCBS to immediately assign a claims processing agent for any defaulted self-insured employer or self-insured employer group, regardless of when that entity defaulted or decertified. This bill also covers individual self-insured employers because Senate Bill 1558 in 2014 only addressed the ability to assign a claims processing agent to a self-insured employer group. This will establish a consistent process for claims processing assignments and will help to ensure that benefits are paid timely to workers. The second area that the bill addresses is recovering damages from third parties. Current law allows workers with accepted claims or an insurer on their behalf to recover damages from third parties in certain circumstances. The most common example of this is in an auto accident. If a worker is injured in an accident while on the job and it's as a result of a third party. If damages are collected from the third party, the proceeds are distributed in a specific manner, including payments to what the statute calls a paying agency. Under the law, the paying agency is the self-insured employer or the insurer that has paid out the workers' compensation benefits. DCBS is considered to be the paying agency only if the worker elected to bring the action, and DCBS has expended costs for vocational assistance, or for claims costs in situations where there's a non-complying employer where the employer did not have any workers' compensation insurance coverage. However, DCBS also pays worker benefits from other fund sources for employers covered by defaulted or decertified self-insured employers and self-insured employer groups. That includes paying benefits out of the workers' benefit fund that Lou mentioned a moment ago. If there is a third-party recovery for one of these defaulted entities, under the current law, the department is not considered a paying agency, and recovered funds from third parties would go to the defunct self-insured employer or self-insured employer group. Also, if the insurer takes on the third-party claim on behalf of the worker, the law does not require any repayment of any expended department funds. House Bill 2336 specifies that DCBS is a paying agency with respect to all of its expenditures from all department funds, and clarifies that reimbursements to the department is required no matter which party, either the worker or the insurer, undertakes the third-party recovery action. The third area of the bill addresses legal representation for claims processing agents. When a self-insured employer or self-insured employer group defaults or declares bankruptcy, as I mentioned earlier, DCBS contracts with a processing agent to process the claims. That agent is responsible for any disputes or litigation that arise out of the claims process, and they typically retain their own private legal counsel if needed. DCBS is not directly involved with the claims processing or the resulting litigation, but we do reimburse the processing agent for the claims costs from those department funds. ORS 180.220 requires that the Department of Justice have general control and supervision of all civil actions and legal proceedings in which the state of Oregon may be a party or may have an interest. In the situation I just described, because state funding may be impacted by litigation of a claim, it could be interpreted that DOJ is required to supervise or even direct and control the administrative and legal functions of a private entity. Because the department may seek advice regarding a dispute with a claims processor, or in the event that litigation may come out of decisions made by the department, it is possible that DOJ could be faced with representing the interests of both a self-insured entity and DCBS on the same matter. The amendment in House Bill 2336 allows the claims processing agents that contract with DCBS to process the claims of decertified or bankrupt self-insured employers and employer groups to employ the legal counsel of their choice. This is already the situation for claims processing agents that we contract with to process the claims for non-complying employers, so this change makes that process consistent. The Management Labor Advisory Committee, MLAC, voted to support this bill, and it passed unanimously in the House. I'm happy to answer any questions about that.
Great. Thank you for that thorough explanation. It's very informative. Thank you, Senator Knope and Senator Hansel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, it's just a comment. This is my first opportunity I've had to be able to serve on the Senate Workforce Committee. And I have been very, very impressed with the work of MLAC, the Management Labor Advisory Committee, on all these bills. You know, they sit down, they work them out. They seem to be well thought out. Agreements reached. They've passed out of the House unanimously. And I just, I guess, want to be on the record of saying job well done. Thank you.
Very nice. Any questions, comments? Okay. Thank you both. Thank you. And we'll go ahead. Regarding House Bill 2337A, Thomas Mosier is signed up. Pleased.
Hello, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I have the record. My name is Thomas Mosier. I'm here representing the Oregon Coalition of Police and Sheriffs. We submitted a floor letter previously from the president of the Oregon Coalition of Police and Sheriffs, Daryl Turner. So I'm just really reiterating that we think this is a really good bill. It creates a more balanced and consistent system for ensuring workers who are injured on the job are adequately compensated for their service and protected at their most vulnerable. The men and women of WorkOps go to work every day knowing they are at great risk of serious injury or worse. They serve our community dutifully and in the face of these risks, and it's our responsibility to be there for them when a serious injury takes them off the street. As a coalition of labor organizations, we also recognize the importance of providing these protections to all workers who find themselves unable to continue in their work due to a permanent disability. It's an important step in modernizing our workers' compensation system and ensuring that it keeps pace with the rising cost of living. We respectfully ask that you vote yes on this bill.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions or comments? Thank you. Appreciate that. So we're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2335, House Bill 2336A, House Bill 2337A, and House Bill 2338A. And we are done for the day, committee members, as nice as that is.
Wow.
Our next meeting is going to be on Wednesday. We will be taking the full time, I imagine, on Wednesday, April 26th, 2017. We're going to have a public hearing on House Bill 2005A, and that is the Equal Pay or Pay Equity Bill. We have two other bills on the agenda. We're going to try to get to them. We may or may not. Those are House Bill 2186, the Self-Insurer Certification, and House Bill 2263, the Employment Relations Board Mediation Fees. Going back to House Bill 2005A, the Pay Equity Bill, I have had an amendment drafted that I was hoping to get back this morning, but I don't believe that we have it back next. Very soon, apparently she just went and checked with Elsie. So we'll be getting it out soon, making some changes to the pay equity bill or equal pay bill that passed out of the House. So just wanted to bring that to everyone's attention. If folks could keep an eye out for that. Again, I was hoping to hand it out ahead of time, but was unable to do that. And so we'll be talking about the bill. Remember, we had a hearing before, and then it went through the House process, so now we'll have another hearing here, and then we'll talking about the amendment. So, okay, all right, thank you, and we're going to go ahead and adjourn the meeting on Senate Committee on Workforce. All right.